Hello, just a quick bit before this week's episode to let you know that we have a Patreon you can subscribe to if you like what we're doing here and you want more of it. You probably already knew that. We don't stop going on about it. What you didn't know is that you can currently get a little free trial, so you know exactly what you'd get as part of your subscription. You can head to patreon.com/whatismusicpod or follow the link in the show notes to get your first 7 days free. All you need to do is pick which tier you'd like a free trial of. The Biggest Mates tier is the one that has all the extras in it. And then for 7 days, you are free to listen to any episode we've released in the last 6 months. You can cancel any time or just leave the subscription rolling if you like what you find. It's charged monthly. And during any month, as part of that Biggest Mates tier, you'll get ad-free episodes of this show every Monday. You'll get a brand new episode of our new Manic Street Preacher show every month. 2 episodes every month of the Ultimate Playlist, our themed playlist show, where we talk about all kinds of different music, different artists, different genres, different eras, and 1 or 2 bonus episodes every month, depending on the length of the month. That's 2 episodes every week. There's also other tiers to trial. One that is just the Manic Show and ad-free What Is Music episodes, and another that is just ad-free What Is Music episodes. But hey, if the first 7 days are free, why not try a bit of everything? Plus, all tiers include access to the exclusive subscriber-only Discord where we discuss the shows, the bands we've covered, various music topics, and loads of other stuff, including some games that the friendly community have devised themselves. So head on over to our Patreon page now to claim your free 7-day trial. Go to patreon.com/whatismusicpod or follow the link in our show notes. See you there.
So, just a word of warning then, don't swallow boiling water without letting it cool down.
Whoa, hang on. Don't swallow boiling
water.
Well, I do that every morning. I gargle with boiling water and it gives me nice clean vocal cords for the rest of the day.
Well, hang on. The lyric on this album.
Yeah.
There's a lyric on this album that says swallow boiling water.
Yeah, and there's also one that says clean.
On Assassin, there's that line where it says swallow boiling water.
Clean your eyeballs with sandpaper. Yeah.
Yeah, so what? Which is true. I mean, I trust Matt Bellamy over you.
I do not trust Matt Bellamy.
I trust a man I've never met, but he's famous over friend of many
never
years.
Never trust Matt Bellamy.
Definitely.
Who do you prefer, Steve or Matt Bellamy?
Prefer in what regard? Musical output, Steve, I'm sorry, mate, but you don't make the cut compared to Matt
Bellamy.
Okay,
but what about everything
rock
else?
Band Muse. everything else, I think Matt Bellamy's probably... I'd probably rather shag him than Steve.
Really? Oh. Steve's a good-looking guy.
But I feel like I'd rather have a...
Bellamy's like what?
Oh, that... No, Lucas,
well.
That
like
is...
I'd rather have like a...
That's absolutely devastating.
I feel like I'd rather have like a one-to-one conversation with Steve, though. About like
what,
normal,
than Matt Bellamy?
About like normal things.
That's absolutely devastating.
Mm. What, that I
that
think...
you want to talk to me?
Hello. And welcome to... Why did I say that like a child's TV presenter?
Hello.
And welcome to What Is Music, a music podcast about music. We're a podcast that focuses on discographies in their entirety. We're doing deep dives on one artist at a time, and we're currently in season 2, which is called, all together now, Are
What
You
is
Amused?
Music?
A critical analysis of the history, cultural impact, and music of
Manic Street Preachers.
We're going through their entire career, album by album,
Black
track
Holes
by track,
and Reservations.
Asking questions like, does context matter when you are listening to the music? Does knowing the history of an artist affect your appreciation of the output? And this season, we're of course asking, are you amused? Just a little clarification, we're asking if you're amused by the band Muse, not whether or not you are amused by us, the hosts of this season, Are You Amused, which is the season of What Is Music that you are now listening to. I'm Adam Scott Glasspool, and I'm joined by my co-hosts, Steve Murphy.
Woo!
Big energy.
Thanks.
And
Rick Flair
Lucas
is
Way.
On the podcast.
Rick Flair.
Lucas Way.
Woo!
Okay, great. We are, of course, on our quest to answer the question, what is music? I think music is a way to communicate with the spirit of the universe. What do you think music is?
Something to make money with.
Okay. Very cynical view of art there.
It's kism backwards.
Yeah, it is.
It is.
I wouldn't pronounce it like that. I'd probably
Schism?
Say kissum, I guess.
Kissum.
Yeah,
that would be the actual don't
kiss others.
Of music backwards.
You guys all right?
Yeah, man.
Yeah, it's been a long time since we spoke and recorded, and we didn't just record an episode about Absolution DVD.
Yeah, we did.
So, yeah.
We definitely were.
Well, you've got... Yeah. Just like how you got the same and the opposite mixed up, you've confused what happened and what didn't happen again. Yeah.
Matt Bellamy gets mixed up with those two things sometimes as well by the sound of these bloody, some of these lyrics. Yeah, I'll tell you, sometimes he mixes up what happened and what
New
didn't
York City
happen
these
and what's
days.
True. And what's true and what's wrong.
Everybody's on their lyrics these days.
Everybody's reading their bloody lyrics these days. All these kids are just reading their bloody lyrics on their bloody
phones. Do you think they are?
Phones.
Do you think kids are reading lyrics these days?
No, I think they read them on a lyric video on YouTube because that's how they consume
music. Oh, Lucas,
music.
YouTube is so...
So the answer is yes.
Yesterday.
Do you think they're reading lyrics? No, I think they're reading lyrics.
But I think they should probably go to another tab and they're like watching TikToks whilst the lyric video is playing on a different tab.
I don't think there is a desktop version of TikTok, is there?
No, I don't know. I know. And also, I don't think kids are using a device that's capable of simultaneous tabs because I don't think they're using laptops. They're just using their bloody phones.
There's a bit there that we do all the time, but actually, we are getting old and like, actually.
I mean, we've had a very impassioned debate recently about TikTok where I was very much old man yells at cloud about TikTok.
You have such a strange notion of a debate. Because I was just saying, like, oh, this is how I feel about TikTok. And you were like, no, it's wrong.
No, this is how I feel. Oh. But when Lucas doesn't like something, like, he wants to murder people that do it. So anyone who likes tacos, you think are idiots.
Yeah. Well, that is the great personality replacement of this decade, isn't it?
What was the
appreciation?
It used to be bacon, now it's tacos.
Oh,
yeah. See, I'm glad Adam's on my side that those people are wankers.
Yeah.
And Steve's not because Steve
is one.
Well,
I don't think they're wankers. It's just not something that
you
I
called
would
them
do.
Wankers?
Yeah, but in private. not in public. Should we just get on with it?
In case any of our listeners are taco wankers.
Adam goes into like the bathroom on his own and like stuffs a taco down his face and cries in private.
I love tacos.
Private Instagram account.
I had tacos last night.
Baby.
Do you know what? That's new information to you that I had tacos last night because I didn't fucking post about it on my fucking Instagram.
There you go.
Right. Anyway.
Black holes.
We're going through the discography of the explorers of Astro Pop Muse from three different perspectives. Me, I'm personally very analytical and deeply into context of music, but I'm not really that big a fan of Muse. Steve, you are sort of moderately thoughtful about music and a bit of a Muse fan. Lucas, more analytic, you know, these days, but, you know, still kind of... You are less inclined to the artistic ways of life than perhaps me and Steve are.
Or the average mole.
Yes, exactly. But you are a huge Muse fan. Much like other average moles.
Why?
Last time we were talking to you, we looked at their third album, Absolution. Bit of a controversy was sort of stirred up. From that episode or those episodes, right?
Can you say that word properly, please?
Which
what, episode?
Controversy.
Yeah, it's controversy.
It's controversy.
That's the American way of saying
it. No, you're saying it the American way.
No, I'm saying it the American way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're saying it the Lucas way.
Debate. debate.
Can you not do that on camera?
Debase Mason's grog. We'll get to that in a minute.
Okay. No. Debate? Will we?
Okay, yeah, we will. Then. We will get fine. To those exact words
fine.
In a minute.
Fine. Fine. Controversial episode. How do you guys feel about the fact that that was some kind of weird, controversial sort of thing?
I feel like I agree with the people who disagree with you.
That's fine. But what was interesting, and I was looking at the stuff from Reddit and on Twitter, there were some people who were saying, actually, it did make them look at Absolution a little bit differently.
It did make me look a bit differently.
Really?
I am now looking at Absolution a little bit differently. Well, no, I mean, I gave it a very good score. But in terms of my rankings...
You gave it a 9 out of 10.
Yeah. In terms of my rankings, yeah. I previously was like, oh, coin toss between whether Absolution or Origin of Symmetry is my favourite Muse album.
Oh.
It's no longer even close. It's not a coin toss by any stretch of the imagination.
Interesting.
That coin's been spent. I spent it.
Gone down the shop and bought a Freddo with it.
And I spent it. And I spent it on a Radiohead album.
Wow.
Yeah. Just to add insult to injury.
Amazing.
Which in Rainbows, you could pay whatever, yeah. And you just paid one coin.
Amnesiac.
Oh. Amnesiac for a pound.
Yeah.
A coin. A single coin for Amnesiac, please, Governor.
Yeah, £1 coin. I love how you assumed a pound. It could have been 1p. It could have been 2p. It could have been 5p. It could have been 10p. It could have been 20p. It could have been 50p. It could have been the aforementioned pound. And it could have been £2.
Yes.
And it could have been a commemorative £5 coin.
Excellent stuff. Good. I'm glad that we both got to the commemorative £5 coin. Steve's thought of another coin.
Yes, and...
Excellent. And we're all doing improv, and that's great. So how much of that do you think was you being the sort of... like, Absolution having a lot of nostalgia sort of attached to it?
Yeah, I mean, just to make clear, none of it was that you guys changed my mind. Mm,
mm-hmm. It forced you to listen to it with a critical ear.
I listened to it with a more objective bent, and... and came out with some conclusions that I didn't expect. Yeah.
This week, we are going to be looking at the fourth album by Muse, which is one letter away from the word Musk. We're going to be looking at Black Holes and Revelations. But we do like to take in all...
Is this going to be a series?
The commentary episode first. We should have started with this one. Right. We like to take in all manner of context surrounding the music, including biographical. And so with that in mind, Stephen Murphy, why don't you catch us up on where we got to in the story of Muse, which is one letter away from Musk.
I hate this bit. Like, this is the worst.
The Musk bit?
No, this bit of the podcast where I've got to remember. The Musk thing.
I hate this bit of my life.
What, just right now?
It's also one word away from Mose, which is Dwight Schrute's brother
on The Office.
Just buying Steve some time.
Kevin Smith's writing, producing partner, Scott Mosier.
Yes, the Mose.
Yeah.
We're buying Steve time. Steve.
Oh, it's not going to help.
Well, band names first. Band names first.
The band names.
Band names. Band names. It's Muse. It's
band
Muse.
Members' names, professions.
Matt Bellamy. Twat.
Yes.
Sorry.
Excellent. No. Professional.
Vocalist
twat.
And guitarist and pianist. Dom Howard on the percussion and the drums. And Chris Wolstenholm on the bass guitar. And occasionally,
Nailed it.
And hullabaloons.
I don't want to spread any rumours that Chris Wolstenholm is occasionally tinkering, so let's move on.
Yeah, they recorded Absolution, then they toured some touring. They played Glastonbury in 2004 and headlined. They did that, and then they thought, I'll tell you what, we'll just record another album. Am I wrong?
Yeah. Did they, though?
What?
No, they didn't want to record this album. They were contractually obligated.
I imagine they wanted to record another album.
Through in the album.
Yeah, I think they probably did want to record it too. But I think there was also probably a contract that said they had to.
Yeah, sure. But you know, as professional musicians,
actually, that's not true. This is the one episode I've made that joke where it's actually not true. because this is when they switched labels. So actually, it's the one time where they weren't contractually obligated to get to anything because they were at the end of their 3-album deal.
Right. Okay.
So I'm a failure.
Yeah, you are. Yeah.
Oh well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was I
not for that?
About right.
Yeah. About. I mean, some other stuff happened. Probably. I'm sure. Yeah. Things. You know, some other stuff happened.
Are you going to tell us?
You're sure. You're not like. Why don't you tell us,
Lucas? When you joked earlier and said you haven't written anything down, and I'm going to host this episode, was that a joke or is this actually going to happen? Take a bow.
Tell me about the campus invasion tour, Steve.
Oh my god. Oh, it's just they were on it and stuff, weren't they?
They were on that tour.
Yeah.
The campus invasion tour. Can I take a guess?
They played universities.
Yeah.
Yeah, but was it part of like a group of bands that were like touring around? You know, like the Enemy would put on like a tour that would have all the hot bands of the day. Was it like that?
Would have all the new rave bands playing in one gig, one new rave tour.
Fucking interesting. Ting-tings. I've got new rave in my notes so often. It's interesting you bring that up.
This was when Claxtons were like the thing, right?
I love Claxtons.
That was like peak Claxtons.
Bill Claxton.
Bill Claxton. I think I covered it at the end of the last episode or maybe at the start of this one. I don't know yet because I haven't said it yet. But they actually were at the end of their... they weren't contractually obligated to make this album because this was when they'd finished their 3-album deal with Little Taste Media down in old Devon. And they finally getting, you know... they signed up. I mean, I think we covered this last episode.
I love that we're kicking off with the nitty gritty
short
record
version,
label
they
stuff.
They sign. Short version: Mushroom Records gets sold to Warner Brothers, which means Muse are now signed to Warner Brothers.
Huh, I'm surprised about that. I'm actually surprised they were bought, because from what I've heard, Warner Brothers didn't have Mushroom for them.
See, what he did there was he said Mushroom for them.
Yeah.
Which sounds remarkably like much room for them. But it's a play on the fact that the name of the record label is Mushroom.
This is some of my
the
best
thing that grows
stuff.
Resembles the thing that grows out of Adam's penis.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, now I'm on board. I understand now, yeah.
Yeah. You making that joke just goes to show that you're not a fun guy.
Just trying to think of other... Struggling off. No, I don't know.
Adam, you're drinking a wine, right?
Portobello.
I'm thinking port.
Yeah.
Portobello. Something there.
Well, I'm actually drinking.
Muse
beer.
Start their own record label under Warner. It's called Helium 3.
All right.
Fucking hell. Which is the thing that's on the moon, right?
Helium 3 is the isotope of. That is a particular. It's on the moon, and it's
No, 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 no. Read what you wrote down. Don't just go. Oh, yeah, it's on.
Read what I copied and pasted from Wikipedia.
Yeah, I want to know. I want to know.
The
I
name
know
helium three is derived from
too.
The isotope helium 3. The isotope of helium is a particular interest in physics for several reasons, including its use as a potential fuel for fusion power, and the behaviour as a substance displays when cooled to very low temperatures.
See, that is interesting.
Is it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, and very mused that they would call
it's
their
very mused,
record label that.
There was something on the moon. Spiders.
I mean, and I'm sure Matt's read a conspiracy that like all of the world's governments are fighting a secret Cold War about who can have all of Helium-3 off the moon.
Oh my god, that is going to be the next
that
gets sort of
is that how Matt Bellamy gets to those high notes? Something about helium. Move on, Lucas. Come on. Come on, stop. Nice. Stop
lots of
different
trying
helium,
stuff.
That's not the same helium.
Yeah, I'm workshopping
the helium.
Live.
Contrary to popular belief, the helium that people use in balloons isn't the same one that
is
for this stuff.
And why
not? Say we're wasting all the helium on balloons. It's not true. It's a different type of helium.
Why isn't it the same helium?
I don't know. I'm not a physicist.
Oh,
okay.
What a bombshell.
I know, right? I'm actually not a physicist. So... we ended the last bit at the sort of Earl's Court, sort of ending the Absolution era with a bang in the UK stuff. But they don't stop touring there. They basically go and do... They continue their quest to try and get big in the States. So they stopped doing the rest of the world, but they basically go and do the States. Because at this point, when we saw it on the Absolution DVD, they were doing...
Yeah, tiny little gigs.
So they... Yeah, so they up, but they upgrade a little bit.
Bars.
Pubs to universities. Oh. And start playing the Campus Invasion Tour.
Okay.
Which is like a sort of co-headline. It's like a co-headline with Razorlight.
It's that time,
like,
isn't it?
Yeah. Similar size at that time in the States.
That makes sense, I guess.
But it's not, it's kind of not the Absolution Tour anymore. It's kind of almost pre-Black Holes, because they're playing a handful of Black Holes songs in their own form. Cool. And but then they're kind of not focusing on Absolution, because they're not trying to promote that album anymore. It's more like just trying to break America, right? Like, that's just the whole aim of the game.
Yeah.
It's a little tour in America. Some fun stuff happens on this one, because they basically start, they do like a little, is this interesting? Maybe not.
I love how
probably
you start.
But Steve, you got into Cloverfield and all that shite a lot,
man,
back in the day.
Shite.
They do a bit of one of them. They do. I say that like someone who didn't follow Lost.
Yeah, I'm surprised you weren't in heavily into Cloverfield. Bearing in mind they like share.
I think
like
I just missed the boat with that one.
Well, yeah. the boat that brought over Slusho, which actually might have infected, and the chemical waste from Slusho might have actually mutated the creature.
I literally don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, Cloverfield.
Anyway, they do a little like crypto. What's the word? Cryptography. Little ARG. I think you would call it.
Darg.
On this tour, where they basically like hide little hidden messages in set lists, basically knowing full well that fans will dig.
Oh, cool!
So like they're obviously previewing new songs at this point. I'm not going to go through the whole thing because it is lengthy. read up on it yourself, because otherwise I'm going to be talking for 10 minutes and it gets whatever. But they're previewing new songs at this point, but they haven't got names for them, so they name them gibberish,
which is code.
But it's anagrams. So I'll go through the first one. So they put word code break at the top of a set list, knowing full well that like a fan will pilfer it off the stage,
as
fans do, and then post a picture of it on a forum and say it says code break at the top. And then one of the songs was called Debase Mason's Grog.
Okay, here we go. Okay,
Debase Mason's Grog. Which people realised was an anagram for Message Board song.
Oh, Message Board, okay. I was going to try and solve
Message
it.
Board. Oh, sorry. Okay, well, I won't do it for the next one. Message Board song. They then had... you won't get this next one.
Oh,
the next
very
one,
rude.
The next one was called Cold Aqua Tomato.
I will not get that.
Bap
no,
of the problematic.
Which people realised was qua@aol.com, which was Matt Bellamy's email address.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Qua.
People knew at this point. People knew his email address. Q-U-A.
Ooh. Okay.
Q-U-A.
Very
Q-U-A.
Close to QAnon. Well, you know, we'll move on from that.
Many years before. Yeah, probably not relevant.
Do we think that he is Q?
No.
We don't know. Is all we can say.
He's Q in that he is going to be playing the quartermaster in the next James Bond film.
Right. And you think
then
that is the cue from QAnon?
He's going to be the man going, and do bring it back to me in mint condition, Mr. Bond. Or 007.
With an eyebrow.
I don't think he's ever called him
with an eyebrow.
Bond. Yeah.
I'd actually love to see that. I'd love to see Matt Bellamy playing the Q role for one. Like the John Cleese, where he's in for like one and then.
Yeah,
gets
I really thought
recast.
John Cleese was going to be in that for longer. But then they did the reboot, so I guess they have
well,
to.
Well, they rebooted, didn't they?
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah. Ben Whishaw, good at it. He's good at it.
qua@email.com. They then have, I agree. They then have
Paddington is the new Q.
They then have Timescale Keeper.
Okay,
maybe like 5 seconds per.
Timescale Keeper.
As if you're going to get them without writing them down.
I've written them down in my head. I don't know.
Oh God. Keep email secret.
Right.
And then that secret that it wasn't kept secret. The fans immediately shared it with each other. So the next night. They've got Monica Probes, which is Broken Promises.
Right.
Then the next night...
This is some of the lamest shit I've ever heard in my life.
Unpacked Residence, which is Send Naked Pictures. And then Majestic Blue, which is Email Subject.
Right.
and then Swiss Rhapsody, which is password is shy. People then basically realised if you email that email address with the email subject, Majestic Blue, with the password
and
shy,
a picture of your tits,
you get sent back some gibberish. Some stuff gets sent back to you that's in gibberish. The next night they had another song called Preservable Heat that makes reverse alphabet. They realised that the gibberish can be reversed.
Right.
And then basically somewhere hidden in America was a bicycle signed by the band hanging off of a railway bridge with a chain.
What a jump!
Right, and then what was on that?
A signed bicycle.
Yeah, signed bicycle.
Right, and then what's
on
the bike?
So underwhelming for so much effort.
Yeah. And then they did that four times. There's four bicycles on four different parts.
And it was a bicycle every time.
Oh, so there's nothing
on anyone bother with the fourth one?
Yeah.
So there's nothing on the bicycle.
Wait, free bike? Yeah, it's signed by the band.
Oh, I thought it was going to be like the name of the album, and that's how it was. Nope, they could just win a bike.
I've got some,
they do that.
Signed Muse merchandise, actually. Oh, really? What have you got? It's this bike.
A signed ticket to Butlins.
They do take it further on the next album, where they do actually do this for like the album release. On this one, it's just a bit of fun, basically, to keep them entertained whilst they're traveling the States.
I mean,
and it's a little fun thing for the fans. A little bit of fun. Some of them a bit more intense than others. Some of them you had to like download a program and enter a code and stuff like that. It's a little bit of fun across the tour.
From when Trent Reznor hid the new Nine Inch Nails album in USB sticks around each city he was touring in.
Well, that's basically what Resistance.
I can't remember what year zero was actually released in, so I can't tell you.
The final one was the words Auditory Masks, which was RAK Studios May, and basically a fan worked that out, went to the studios in May and got a signed guitar.
Much better.
Now, the signed guitar, great.
It's cool.
Not fussed about the signed bike, I'm going to be honest.
I love that, though.
Where did they sign it on the bike?
The tyre.
So it wears away really quickly.
Yeah. Oh, shall I go through every single clue for every single
yeah,
round?
Please,
of this?
Yeah.
Shall I do that?
I want to see if I can crack the code.
All right.
I'm like fucking Alan Turing, but with Muse.
Mm. Good. They played Live 8. Do you remember Live 8?
Yeah, I went.
They did. They did that. Which one did you go to?
I went to the London one, and I was gutted because Muse were announced for the London one and then got moved to Paris. Interestingly, though, I did see Razor Light, so that's good.
That's what they were just talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a shame they got bumped, actually, because I had to sit through, like, fucking Velvet Revolver.
Oh, yeah.
And Joss Stone. And Keane. And I think I would have much rather have seen Muse.
When you say sat through, who did you get at the end of that, though, to make it worth it?
Oh, the original lineup of Pink Floyd.
Jesus.
Okay. Yeah.
Cool.
The only time they've ever played together since, like, the 80s, I think it was, and the last
Muse
gig they ever did together. And I got Paul McCartney.
Muse got moved for Paris because Paris wanted a big... They wanted a big artist for Paris.
Big boy.
And they were kind of, like, one of the main ones there.
They're on the DVD. I have the Live 8 DVD. Managed to win. Did you remember how you had to get tickets for that? You had to like text a competition thing, and you were allocated.
Did you have to like email qua at
that was
AOL.com and then like put the email?
No, do you know what? It was announced
and the password.
It was announced on the Chris Moyles show because he was doing breakfast at the time, and it was like.
And you're obviously a big.
It was at the time.
You're a big Moyles.
I was a big Moyles-y fan at the time. You're right.
You used to tape the radio show, I remember.
And I used to tape the radio show, that's right. And he was on in the afternoon is when I liked him. He was on after Mark and Lard. Mental that they were ever on Radio 1, Mark and Lard. But yeah, you had to text a little competition thing. And my mum won tickets and took me instead of my sister, which I don't think she's ever forgiven me for.
Amazing.
Nah, you're more into music than me, aren't you?
I'm also just the better child.
I did try and say words then, but that's mostly me.
You said
You're turning into Boris Johnson.
Matt moves to Italy.
I thought he was already in Italy.
Italian. No. He was dating an Italian lady, but he was living still in London.
Oh, last time you said he went to live in Italy. And I said, oh, that comes through on the record.
No, he said he had an Italian girlfriend.
I said he was dating an Italian woman and had a long-term relationship. He was like in a committed relationship, and that you said that comes.
Check the tapes.
You didn't say anything. I did, because I listened to him recently.
I'm gonna
why
edit
didn't you
in
burn
the tape,
the tapes?
And we'll see what it said.
Yeah, it moves to Lake Como, which is a really nice place in Italy.
With George Clooney.
They filmed the scenes from Attack of the Clones that were set in Naboo.
Oh, yeah.
So the famous conversation about sand.
It's coarse, and it is irritating, and it does get
it
everywhere.
Would have happened there.
And those bits from Ocean's 12 that are clearly just like George Clooney's house, because he couldn't be bothered to leave.
Yeah. But George Clooney's not in those scenes.
He is, yeah. Him and Tess go and meet... do you know what? It doesn't matter.
Oh, Francois Tolour. I love Ocean's 12.
Ocean's 12 is so good.
It's so good.
It's the best Ocean's movie. It really is.
That is the one with the Julia Roberts thing, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's so good.
I love all the Ocean's
films. They're great.
Because they're charming.
Oh, that's just so much fun. It's just big movie stars having a lot of fun. I'm going to watch Ocean's 12 tonight. Oh. I'm going to get a pizza and watch Ocean's 12.
Not 11. Skip it. Don't worry about 11.
11 I've seen hundreds of times. Going to get 12. 12 is weird. So 12 is the weirdest sequel ever made by a mainstream movie studio.
Oh, interesting. Mm. Interesting.
It's like a European art house movie, but is also the sequel to Ocean's 11.
Yeah. Who's the 12th? Tess.
Yes. Who's the 13th? Yes.
Well, that's the thing. In the Ocean's 13, there's kind of 14.
Is Pacino the 13th? Well,
no. It's the bad guy from the first. It's him.
Oh, Andy Garcia.
And Eddie Izzard.
It's Eddie Izzard and Cherry Garcia. That's right. Okay.
Yeah. That's relevant. This is going to be a double. He moves to Italy. More interestingly than who lives nearby is the house was owned by composer Vincenzo Bellini, which is
who
on.
And I'm not even doing a bit.
He's a composer, an old composer.
Can you
from the composer times?
Can you just flower that up a bit the way you said his name?
Vincenzo Bellini.
Thank you very much.
Well, now you've said it like that, I know who it is.
Yeah,
I recognise the name.
Matt was getting a studio built there, but it wasn't ready in time to record this album there. So
good
they didn't.
Fact.
So
relevant
they didn't.
Context.
It is, because they wanted to self-produce this, but didn't.
Yeah. Oh, they wanted to entirely self-produce, because they do have a production credit, right?
Mildly interesting that happened, actually, I think.
What was that voice? A little gremlin came into the little room there.
Anyway.
It's the Rock Goblin.
So they don't record at his house. In mid 2005, they go to Miraval Studio, which is a chateau in France.
Ooh, lovely.
Which is apparently haunted. Bollocks. It's not haunted.
No,
it's a building. No. The Wall was recorded there.
Which Wall?
The Pink Floyd album.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, it could have been Wonderwall.
Yeah. Wall's Ice Cream.
Could have been.
Yeah.
No, none of those.
Okay. Yeah, it's Pink Floyd.
Not a big fan of The Wall.
It's tough.
Did
you just say
tough?
Well,
that was... So
I said it's tough.
Oh, right.
Originally, do you say it's tough?
Yeah.
So that was originally the entire plan for this album.
What, they were going to record The Wall?
They were going to be... They wanted to go completely off the wall.
They wanted to do a Michael Jackson album.
And they basically isolated themselves there and were very much like, we're just going to do an album away from people and just go mad with ideas. And I think the plan was to make a very proggy and kind of, not to say inaccessible, but, you know, that sort of album that's a bit more...
Weirder.
They didn't want any genre to be off limits or anything. They just wanted to just go sort of thing.
Yeah.
That's interesting because we've ended up with quite an accessible sort of poppy sort of album.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, basically what happened was, so they were doing this for some time. They had a lot of ideas. I mean, they had 20 songs worth of ideas, but a lot of them were 9 minutes long and had, quote unquote, synth twiddles and ridiculous length jazz pieces, and they briefly considered making a double album or even a triple album.
This sounds like exactly the kind of music I'm into.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wank.
They basically just got real, like that sort of screenager vibe when we're talking about screenager, when they got real vibey and real pretentious and wanky
vibey. I think they not pretentious and wanky, in touch with their artistic spirit.
They went hunting through the grounds of the building for the Holy Grail and the Da Vinci Code probably around this time, right? He probably was like, maybe the Grail's under the chateau. I don't know. It's a big chateau in France. It's probably I don't know.
How long do you think they searched for it? Just sort of walked around the grounds and went, nah, it's not there.
Yeah, how intense was this search? Were there diggers involved?
This studio had been closed for years and they convinced the owners to reopen for them. Because also a vineyard. And they're basically like, we're making enough money being a vineyard. We're just going to be a vineyard. We're not going to be a studio anymore. And they kind of...
And so were they... What was the primary goal? Was it recording the album or was it searching for the Holy Grail?
Yes.
Were they telling the owners we want to record an album here
in search for the Holy Grail?
Yes.
What was that? Is it like that? What was that last bit you said?
No, nothing. I said we wanted to record an album here.
Yeah, that's fine.
Search for the Holy Grail.
You said it again. You're mumbling.
The owner apparently didn't really like them being there, and ultimately, I think it's one of the reasons they left that studio was because they weren't welcome. But also, so basically, Rich
so they didn't do the whole album
there. No, so Rich Costey went and joined them later in the process, and they basically only really managed two tracks. Give you a guess which two.
Oh, wow. How long were they there?
I haven't written it down, so shrug.
Great.
Weeks.
They did two. You want me to guess which two tracks they did in their
which
weird
two
exploratory...
they had managed in this?
City of Delusion and Hoodoo.
Well, I think if they're going for something weird and proggy, I think Take a Bow and... Yeah, I'll go Hoodoo.
You're 50% there, I'll Take a Bow. The other one's Invincible.
Fuck, I was going to say fuck.
You didn't, so you don't get a point.
Adam, you fucking idiot!
Fine, man. And basically, they basically kind of, after a while, they kind of looked back over what they'd worked on and basically saw nothing recognisable as something that would make up a coherent album of any description.
I would probably really enjoy that and I'd like to hear it.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to hear it. And it's kind of almost like the only kind of Lost Muse content, because they're fairly tight with not having shitloads of songs and they're narrowing down these.
Oh,
whereas
really?
They apparently had 20 ideas at this point. Well, there's only 11 on the album, and a bunch of them we know were written after this fact. So there must be loads of songs. And I'm sure some of them got turned into the songs we have and ideas got shared and stuff.
Some of them must have been turned into also sort of like B-sides and
stuff,
though, no?
But still, no, 20 right? tracks, though. There's only like two or three B-sides from this era, really.
Is there? I can't remember.
Which is a lot for Muse.
Obviously, my favourite is the Supermassive Black Hole FIFA 07 version.
Is there Seminal. A higher form of art than the FIFA 07 remix of Supermassive Black Hole?
I don't think that they, there
am
is.
I missing they, out?
It's something we can
they
finally
raised
agree
the
on.
Guitar in the mix and lowered the vocals. That's
unbelievable.
It's unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
It's insane.
Unbelievable.
We'll get to it. So
bonus episode on
so
that
at this
song.
Point they're basically like at this point they're basically like, we've got a load of waffle here. We need to almost, and they're kind of, we've gone too detached. We tried to get vibey and it's not really given us good results. We've kind of gone too far in the opposite direction. So they went the complete opposite direction and went to New York City.
Where?
For Christ's sake.
New...
Hot dogs.
New York City, good.
Yeah.
Retired bit. they went to Avatar Studios and Electric Lady Studios, which was Jimi Hendrix's studio, from what I gather.
Okay, cool.
Yep.
Electric Lady, yeah. With Rich Costey still. So he's the sole producer on this one. There's no splitting across different studios. It's Rich.
Wait,
Rich
Muse
the whole way.
But Muse don't get a production credit.
There's no Muse production credit on this one, interestingly.
Absolute madness.
So they basically moved to New York City and kind of refocus.
New York City.
Focus. They spend a lot of time in the New York club scene, listen to a lot more electronic music and dance music, which maybe has a bit of an influence on the album we end up getting.
Oh, that God, you're just going over so many of my notes already.
Why? Some of the songs...
Please don't do that again.
I mean, some of the songs will have been written. I mean, we know that prior to even going into the studio when they were doing the Campus Invasion tour, they had Assassin and Exopolitics because they were playing it live.
Cool. But it does sound like an album where they had like you know, not to jump the gun and move on, but it does sound like an album where they had a bunch of shit and they've just stuffed it into songs.
Well,
do you know
I mean,
what I mean?
It's interesting because quite a few of the songs are like two songs that were originally separate and got became one. And
okay.
Yeah.
By Christmas, basically, they get a lot more on it. They get motivated. They get going. So confident they are that they book Reading 06 headline as like a deadline for themselves, so they have to like have a record out by then.
Interesting.
Which obviously is August time.
Okay.
They finish up the album in the first 5 weeks of 2006 at Officine Meccanici Studios in Milan.
Nailed it.
Admirable. Admirable.
Officine Meccanici.
Tried it again. Even better.
A place name that was improvised by Chevy Chase in a 1980s film.
That's basically where they record all the string sections. And looking through on the old Muse Wiki, it seems like that is where they will always record string sections on every album from here on out, which is interesting.
So
must have a little relationship with like a Italian string team. Orchestra? Let's go with orchestra.
No, you're right. String team. Yeah.
And that's where they do all the stringy bits.
Yeah.
And
the competitive string team.
And then they mix it at the London Townhouse Studios. That is five different studios. Is that too many studios?
That's fair.
Why mix
normal,
it at another different one? Like, why move again?
Completely different surroundings, different speakers, different environment. You get a completely fresh sort of perspective on how the music sounds. It's why like I personally like record on headphones and then mix on speakers, because you get like a completely different.
And your like Logitech PC speakers are like obviously real good. Like,
you say that right, but it's a really good practice to play them through
laptop speakers,
really shit speakers.
That's how everyone will listen to the music.
Because yeah, but also like it highlights bits in your mix that aren't quite right. And this is really boring, and we should move on.
No, it's really interesting, and you should talk about it for longer. I mean,
all right,
I mean,
here you go,
then. They finish recording the album at this point. I mean, well, obviously, you know, we cover more of the recording stuff as we do the tracks, don't we? Is the thing. I'm not going to.
At this point, I'd like to point out, I genuinely have burnt my throat drinking that too hot coffee at the start of this recording.
A cold
really?
Drink.
Is it painful?
It's really
for you?
Quite painful, yeah.
Well,
can you taste blood?
Oh, yeah, but I always can. That's healthy, though, isn't it?
That's normal.
I mean, I can taste full of blood, aren't we? Bodies are full of blood, so you're constantly coughing it up.
Yeah.
I mean, I
and then you have to swallow it because that's where the blood should be.
I can taste
blood. You don't want
blood.
It outside the body.
Yeah, everyone can taste blood. If I drank some blood, I could taste it. So I can taste blood.
And you do, like, regularly bathe in it.
Steve, do you actually need to like take a pause?
No, I'm good.
And like,
no,
and, like, good. Soup, no. Like neck an ice cube.
No. Oh god. That's good. I'm good.
They've got an album. It's in the bank at this point. They play Radio 1 Big Weekend. They preview a few tracks here and there.
And what a big weekend it was.
Such a big weekend.
It's massive. It was six weeks long.
It's almost. It's not
like
just massive.
Summer holidays.
Guys, it's not just massive.
It's super massive.
It's super massive.
They
played, for some stupid reason, on a TV show, they did a mimed version of Supermassive Black Hole.
Cool.
Which then immediately means Supermassive Black Hole was leaked.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's a studio recording of them miming to it on a TV show.
Yeah.
What a stupid idea. So Supermassive
Black
Hole leaks.
I'm sure they didn't mind.
So no, well they do a little bit mind, because then they have to rush release it. So they like do a quick download release of it, and then it gets released on CD a little bit later on.
Interesting. I don't remember
which gets
any
to number
two.
What does Supermassive Black Hole get to? Steve,
I think it's two. Steve's going to say three.
In two, the Supermassive. Steve.
Well, I was going to say two as well. But...
Well, no, you got to say something different.
Okay, I'll say 12 just to make Adam happy.
Adam's closer because it's four.
Excellent. Oh. You should have said three.
You just
Steve.
Said three.
I know.
So weirdly, so Supermassive Black Hole was the first single in the UK. There's only one single prior to the album's release.
Oh. That is also is that not Black Hole. Standard at this point? Like at 2006, that's sort of is that not the done
well,
thing?
The last two fair. Both had two singles prior to the album's release.
Yeah, but that is like the music industry is changing rapidly at this point in sort of.
history. No one's buying those bloody CDs anymore. Everyone's on those bloody streamings and those bloody iTunes and their 79p singles.
Exactly. I mean, we talked last time about the fact that there was a separate download chart even, right? So it's obviously like it's coming to the forefront in the music industry. But I think album cycles just get like shorter. Like if you look at like the 90s, like I'm thinking of REM, who would have like 6 singles per album, and one of those singles would be released like nearly 18 months after the album had come out.
Well, that kind
you
of happens
see that
now. Well, on this one a bit, like some of the last single for this is nearly a full year after the album comes out, which is
wow,
quite a long time.
That is, yeah, right? yeah, it is. That's right.
So yeah, Supermassive Black Hole is the first single in the UK. Not in the States. Knights of Cydonia is the first single in the States.
Ooh.
Okay.
Interestingly.
That is interesting.
They just swap them. They flip them.
A bit more...
They flip them.
Yeah, I wonder why that is.
It's very American. I mean, it's very American.
Edited or same length? Yeah, I mean, it has that American sound. Yeah.
I don't know. Is the answer to the question.
Cool.
But that is... that's a little bit... No, it's still pre-album coming out. The Knights coming out in the States is also before the album comes out. It's not like it's after the album or anything like that.
Okay.
It still is. The album leaks on June 7th.
Oh, dear.
That's when leaks are now a thing for everything.
Did you download it?
I did not download it.
Oh, good boy.
I didn't either. I guess I didn't know because I don't remember.
Well,
it was in
mono form, and obviously I knew that like mono.
Oh, you need the full stereo
presentation. I'm not listening to it in mono. I'm not listening to it in mono.
Well, you didn't know what that was then.
Yeah. No, I didn't. The only stuff I listened to 3 years prior to the album coming out.
You okay?
Was Supermassive Black Hole, obviously.
Sure.
And they played at the Eden Project, like a festival, and they played Nights, and there was like a bootleg of Nights.
Yeah.
And so I listened to that a few times, but I didn't overdo it. I couldn't. Because I'd heard all the buzz about Knights of Cydonia and was like, I need to see all this old Knights of Cydonia things.
About. What, what was your, without telling me what you really think about it, what was your, like, initial reaction to Supermassive Black Hole?
Very confused.
Okay, really? We'll leave it there, and we'll talk about it when we get to
the track. Yeah, because I was obviously, 2006. How old am I, 2006? I am.
16.
Just add
16, 17. So 16. I was at peak. It's got to be rock. Everything is about rock. I love rock music, you know?
Yeah, rock and or roll.
And so so I was like, is this like dance music? What's that about? But I also was like, but I also was like...
You reminded me of a time when Steve...
Stop it.
We chose to meet at the dance tent at Glastonbury Festival.
And
we were stood outside and he spent the whole time complaining that there was dance music on. As if he was expecting anything different from the dance tent.
I just trekked in the rain as well, like, and fell over in the mud.
Over, right?
Yeah.
But this was kind of peak...
Bad
this was kind of peak... I mean, I assume this is still a thing now. I'm just not young enough to give a shit. But
sure,
very like tribalism of music types, like grungers, grungers and townies or chavs.
I don't think that does.
I was very
anymore.
Like, I would not have listened to a rap. I would not have listened to some like hip
a rap.
I'd be like, no, I'm a rock. I listen
He's
to rock
so
music.
Old. He's so.
I wouldn't listen to a hip hoppity rap.
When you're like a teenager, you know, like
yeah, man,
that,
no, I know
it's
what
that
mean.
Thing. Like,
but likewise, I bet you were very much like, yeah, but it's Muse, so even if I don't like it, I'm going to pretend to like it in my head.
But the thing is, I probably did like it, but was like, am I betraying my core beliefs by liking it?
They made you challenge your core
you
beliefs.
You looked at yourself in the mirror, sweating and just like screaming,
"Who am I anymore?"
I mean, I certainly was probably like, "This is no Hysteria," you know, like being like, "This isn't a rock song."
Yeah.
We'll get to it. We'll get to the song in a bit, won't we? They do like a little few handful of gigs here and there. They do a fan only free gig on June 28th.
Did you go?
They played most of the album, but I didn't. Again, I didn't listen to any of the bootlegs, mm-hmm. and I did.
Oh, okay. And you weren't there.
So no, I wasn't there.
Oh, were you at that gig or?
Shut up! I wasn't at that gig.
Right.
No, it was a competition. You had to win a competition.
Oh, you weren't there then.
28th of June 2006, album is released in Japan.
What's it called?
Jesus Christ, you
3rd of January. 3rd of January 2006, it's released in the UK.
3rd of January 2006?
July.
Right, I was going to say.
3rd of July.
I was just trying to match up the things. And so, right, it was released in January, but it leaked in June.
July. It's 45 minutes. I'm doing the admin that I have to do.
Oh, lovely.
It's 45 minutes and 28 seconds long.
How many tracks is it, though?
It's released on Warner and Helium 3. It's 11 tracks long.
Who's it by?
It's produced by Rich Costey. The artwork, once again, is done by Storm Thorgerson.
Good.
A.K.A. The Mountain from Game of Thrones.
Artwork.
So strong.
It's good artwork.
Good artwork. We talked about this on the Absolution episode. I don't like it as much as Absolution. I think it's less clear.
I prefer it to the Absolution artwork.
Hang on. Before you say anything, Steve, do you remember what Adam said about it on the last episode?
It's the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse.
Okay, I was going to get Steve to see what he got if you hadn't said
that. I would never have got that.
Yeah.
I'm happy.
Whereas Absolution, it's some kind of rapture.
I would never have got it with some kind of rapture either.
What?
I'm weird.
You could tell it was Mars, stupid. Though, right, Steve? Steve, you could tell it was Mars.
Yes.
You knew it was
Mars. I could tell it was Mars because it's red.
The problem with it being Mars, though, is Mars doesn't have an atmosphere, so it wouldn't have a blue... It doesn't have a blue sky because there's no atmosphere on Mars.
And that's your problem with the artwork, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, I like the artwork. I do like it.
I really like the artwork. I like it. It's evocative.
I prefer it to the Absolution artwork for much the same reason that, spoiler alert, I prefer this album to Absolution, which we'll get into.
Wait, you prefer the Absolution... You just said you prefer the Absolution artwork.
Did I? I don't think I did.
You just said I prefer the Absolution artwork and then said the opposite point.
Check the tapes.
Check the tapes. Stop the count.
I actually prefer the Absolution artwork. Oh, you're right. No, I did say that. Sorry. Yeah. My bad. Let's 1-0. We'll move on.
The artwork is, yes, you're correct. It's supposed to be the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse on Mars, and they've outgrown their tiny horses because of the scale of their sins.
Hang on, wait. So before they were riding around on those tiny little horses.
No, they've outgrown them because of the scale of their sins.
But before, the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse were like 6 inches high.
Well, you don't know. You don't know. Who
or is that a massive table?
Might be a massive table.
Massive table. All right, fine.
The four colours of the horses apparently represent death, war, famine, and the Antichrist.
Pestilence. What? That's not the Four Horsemen then.
And the horsemen's suits represent greed, paranoia, religious intolerance, and narcissism.
What about pestilence? Everyone's forgetting pestilence.
Everyone Livid. Always bloody forgets pestilence.
The horse colour bit, whatever. But
sure.
The suits actually I kind of get, because greed, one of them's wearing bright gold. Paranoia, one of them's got like, he's covered in eyes, I think.
The all-seeing eye.
Religious intolerance, isn't one of them covered in religious iconography, I think.
Oh, is he?
I think so. I'm trying to look at it on my wall.
Yeah, I'd have to look it up.
Yeah.
Have you got it on your wall, Lucas?
Narcissism. I'm just going to stand up. 2 seconds. I'm just going to stand up midway through the episode and look at it.
Okay.
Let's do this.
That's fine. That's absolutely fine. I mean, I've just got it on my...
The narcissism guy is covered in mirrors.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. That's cool.
Does it make sense? Because narcissism is not, you know... Whatever.
None of that is clear at just like... The Absolution one is just like, it's... The apocalypse. It's the rapture.
But you know me. I think that's what I like about it, is that it requires some work.
I like it. I think it looks cool, but it. Yeah. Also, I couldn't get a tattoo of it because it's not. It's not like there's no sort of like simple iconography there. What are you going to do? Get a portrait of that.
Well, yeah. I think you should add to the tattoo you've got, and with the tuning fork things you've got from Origin, put the bodies on the floor of that, and instead of white and orange, have it as sort of like deep orange and blue, and then that's sort of like the three represented.
I've seen people who've mocked up the artworks. I mean, I showed you the Origin Amuse box set where they like combined the artwork for Showbiz and Origin.
Yeah,
I've seen
yeah,
people
yeah.
have done a similar thing with other albums. Like, cool. yeah, people do it as like an art thing. An art thing.
An art thing.
An art thing.
It's released.
And so the album, it's been released. It's been released.
Here we
it's
go.
Released.
Then. Lucas, what was your like experience of the release of this album?
This is the most... Okay, so right off the bat on this one, for me, before not even saying anything about my score or my opinion of the album as a...
No, just your experience when it came out, like, you know, was this a day
but
one purchase?
For me, this is peak Muse. This is the best season of Muse.
Right. Okay.
In this, for me, is the most hyped I've been for one of their albums. It really felt like Muse getting massive and yeah. ascending to that, like, I mean, you talked about it before. You said about like the season finale of Muse is the harp gig.
Yeah, 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 that's a good way.
At this point, like I'd reached an age where I had like the autonomy that we went to whatever gigs we wanted to, and we could make cars.
Ooh,
you know, like we could go and do things.
Good way.
All of my friends and girlfriend were into Muse, which over the years then just only decreases in the number of people I have to go to Muse gigs. We yeah. just get less and less and less and less and less.
Well, you've always like, got us now like because absolute... we're contractually obliged.
Yeah, this is like peak Muse, like fandom and excitement and being, and it just felt like the most exciting time to be a Muse fan was Black Holes and Revelations. It was like a huge deal, I remember it feeling like. We listened to the album on the first day it came out. A friend of mine's parents were away, so he had the run of the house, and we got stoned in his garden and laid in his living room on the sofas and listened to it in silence as a group.
How was that? Ooh, was that nice?
Lovely.
We like really sat. We really gave it our time. We like got baked and then like were like shut up, silence.
Oh,
and
okay.
Listen to it properly.
So this is, would you say that this is like the peak of your Muse fandom? Were you a similar way for the Resistance? Or
Resistance got the same treatment, but it felt like trying to recapture that.
Oh, okay.
A little bit.
A certain magic.
Steve, you were there when we did it with the Resistance.
Was I?
Huh. You came to my uni house. Huh. You and friend of the podcast, James Quinn, came to my uni house and we listened to it at my uni house.
I have no memory of that.
Well, because to you it was just like whatever, whereas I was like, no, like, can you take this seriously? This is quite a big
deal.
Oh,
amazing. Oh god, I wish
I must have been so irritating.
Can you take this seriously, please, guys, actually?
It's ringing a little bell, but yeah.
But we'll get to that. We'll get to that. That's obviously in a few years.
All right.
This was peak. This was peak news. Everything around this album cycle was like the announcement of the stadium gig. Everything just felt important and like peak Muse have gotten to that level. They're massive and
I was in a probably a similar place to you. This is the peak of my Muse enjoyment. Day one purchase, I remember walking from college into Eastleigh to get it from the big Tesco in Eastleigh.
Yeah,
still there. Yeah. It's not that big, but I mean, whatever.
And it's bigger than the other Tesco's.
It's not
the
biggest one in Burslesdon, though, is it?
And
we're really narrowing down where we grew up as well to our listeners. Yeah. We're like getting closer to people being like, oh, when I grew up on like in like Glen Road.
Yeah.
I've never grown up in a place called Glen Road, and I just remembered that one of Muse's old managers was called Glen Rowe.
And that's where you got that from.
So I've definitely just done something in my noggin.
Yeah, that's a weird little connection that your brain has made. I remember just popping it into my CD Walkman outside Tesco and listening to it on the walk back to what would have been the person I was dating at the time. Who was
also very into Muse.
Super into Muse. On like the first time that we like went on any kind of date, which is really just us hanging out in the afternoon, she played me Newborn on the piano.
Yeah, we became friends over Muse. Like I didn't really ever know her at college until we then realized we were into Muse and we became friends over Muse.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think we started dating like just before this album came out, basically. It would have been would have been super into this album at the time. It was a big deal. I obviously bought tickets for the tour for it and for the harp gigs, which we'll get into at a later date. I just consumed it instantly, and I remember it being quite an important sort of album in my life. My aforementioned girlfriend had at one point lyrics like spray painted on her door from this album. So I have a lot of, associations with this album.
This one for me has the most nostalgia specifically, even though like Origin is further, longer ago and I was younger and stuff. This one's got the most like, also that was a really good time in our lives. Like that's a good age.
College.
You're coming of age. You're turning 18, so you're having that like freedom and you're like, yeah, you're going away to uni and stuff like all that. It's a very good period, isn't it? I mean, these are the years that Steve forever is nostalgic for, isn't it? Is this like period of our lives?
Yeah,
like 2006 and 7 are your like peak nostalgia.
It's going to beaches,
and this album was this period of time, so it's drinking super beers. Like yeah, that it just it's got a lot of good feelings. This album brings me back a lot of good feelings.
So Absolution, I have the memory of being like 14, 15, and like endless summer holidays that lasted forever, and listening to the album in parks, you know, like before we could even drink. And this one I remember like
listening to
first,
in a car,
like yeah, listening to a car in a car, my first like probably what I would describe as my first serious girlfriend, making friends outside of the people that I'd known since I was like 10, you know.
Yeah,
I
mean, like Lucas,
this Hello. Is around the time that
this
we
is when
met
we became
Lucas,
friends,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, let's not say friends, but you know, we definitely we know each other, and we have known each other for many years.
We went
years.
To the same parties.
Do you know, were we friends at that point? Actually, I would say that we weren't friends at that point.
Rocky.
What? Yeah,
don't say it.
It was an odd.
Don't say it.
What?
No, I was going to say it, but Rocky. It wasn't. You know, the start of our relationship has an odd tinge to it.
It's about a girl.
Steve, what was your 2006?
It's like we're both hosts and we both went to say the same thing.
This whole Muse thing just totally passed me by. I was just into, I don't even know what music at this time.
This for you surely was peak like Bullets and Octane.
Yeah, that's it. And, yeah, like Sevenfold and
Sevenfold, and that's
yeah,
the music,
like,
isn't it?
It just totally, I was,
well, I tell you what, so, sorry to interrupt, Steve, but we are only like 5 months after the release of Arctic Monkeys, which I remember you being quite into, the first Arctic Monkeys album.
Yeah, I just sort of, I mean, I was totally aware that it was big within our friendship group and people were so into this.
We moshed to Knights of Cydonia for every party.
Yeah, of course. Like, I knew that song very well. Oh, yeah. I knew, like, you know, Starlight and Supermassive Black Hole. I was very, very aware of all the singles again, but it just totally passed me by. Like, I just never got into Muse in a way that I would go out and buy the album and listen to the album front to back, apart from apparently when I did it with you for the Resistance, which I have no memory of.
Was there a little bit of the, no, because I'm into fucking rock music. I'm into rock.
Yeah, there was probably the, oh, my
tattoos and yeah. Drinking my Jack Daniels and because that was very much like your band was that sort of music.
Yeah,
it?
Yeah.
It's very like,
yeah, I probably decided it wasn't cool to like Muse or something. I don't know. Like, it's not like I disliked it.
It wasn't cool to like Muse. Isn't this the same year we went to see Snow Patrol?
Yeah, no. And also, Steve, when you say it's not cool to like Muse, that hadn't happened.
Listen.
Is absolutely Muse.
That's not what I said. What
powers.
I meant is I probably thought that personally. Yeah.
Because they wore like glittery shirts instead of like a sleeveless shirts with sleeves with skulls.
No, visible tattoos.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, like, I didn't dislike it. I was just very, very aware of the album. And obviously, not even Knights of Cydonia, though, I loved. Like, you can't not.
I mean, it's Knights of Cydonia. It's a song about space cowboys. What are you going to do?
No, that's Jamiroquai.
I don't...
Because this is the return of the space cowboy. That's a song.
Is it? Is that a Jamiroquai deep cut?
Do I smell a bonus episode?
Oh, I mean, yeah. Well, Jamiroquai for me, same level as Lighthouse Family in terms of
I associate the two.
Oh,
no, No, to me, they are like brother bands because they were the two things my dad would play in the car when I was young.
Okay, well, if someone can come up with a funny title,
so I'm
for that,
not joking
we'll
when I say I'd want to do a Jamiroquai bonus episode to complete the collection.
I'm going deeper underground, which was on the soundtrack to 1998's Godzilla.
Yeah. That's the song I want played at my funeral because I think that would be funny.
I was a little worried about
living in a box.
Now, are you going to be cremated or buried, though? Because if you're going to be cremated, that doesn't work.
That's true. I guess, if I'm cremated, what could I play?
So instead, you should have Burn Burn by the Lost Prophets.
Yeah. Sure. Feeling hot.
Or
we could do that.
Baby Burn. Or beat Burn Baby Burn by Ash.
Yeah.
That was a song.
Fire by Arthur
hot
Brown.
Hot Fuss, the album.
Yeah, I'll just play the
Fire
whole album.
Fry by Rammstein.
Yeah.
I was a little worried about going into black holes after Absolution, because I expected Absolution. I really expected to like Absolution, so I was really skeptical about going into black holes. Like, I think I'll like this, so I was therefore thinking, oh no, will I not like it because I didn't particularly, you know, gel with Absolution, but. It certainly has a vibe on this album, but yeah.
What's strange is that five vibes.
Yeah, but like in my head, this album to me was space vibes. was
the abominable Doctor this album, vibes?
Yeah, that's like that. Yeah,
that's something. That's Adam's new comic series.
I had it in my head that this is the space Western album.
Oh, right.
And really, you're talking about a few songs on the album.
Yeah, I had it. Yeah,
like the space Western thing. It's like a few tracks.
Yeah, and again, even in my notes when I started writing it down, is that it was a pop first half and a space Western second, but it's not even that. It's like a trio of them at the end. And this, I will say, this album is absolutely backloaded, which is genuinely refreshing, and I really responded to that because it just kept rewarding me as I listened to it.
Unsurprisingly for me, I don't think it's backloaded. I think it's fully loaded.
Fully loaded. I was also really nervous approaching this album because I went into the quote-unquote critical analysis mode for the podcast on Absolution expecting to come out of it really enjoying it and having an experience that I wasn't expecting, I suppose. There's so much of my nostalgia and memories wrapped up in this album that I thought going back to it would kind of ruin that for me as well, and it would kind of tinge a lot of quite nice memories and also some less nice memories that I have.
You said as well, like at the very start of this episode, you said like Black Osmo Relations I remember was my jam, was my one.
Oh, like at the start of the season. The album like in comparison to the stuff that we've listened to so far on the season for me is far more varied, and it seems more. This is what I was saying about the artwork, is that I don't want to mention Absolution too much, but I see that
just doesn't want to give it the time of day.
I don't want to retread stuff that I received death threats for, but I
they were all from me.
I see Absolution as quite a bit of a grey sludge of an album, and the artwork is actually very grey.
I was just thinking the same thing. It's very colourful,
and yeah, I've got it in my notes. Really colourful album, and it's so much more sort of dynamic, and it's also more like. You were saying peak Muse. I think this is where they strike the perfect balance between sort of being earnest
and silly.
Being silly.
Yeah.
Because some of it is truly mental. Like the twist of our government being aliens in disguise is hilarious to
this
me.
This is peak Matt Bellamy conspiracy theory mode.
Yeah, and there's so many funny moments on the record, but the music sort of matches it, and it's the first time I've got the impression that they are sort of looking at me and just giving me a little bit of a wink.
I've been saying this whole time,
patting me on the bum.
The tongue is firmly in the cheek with Muse.
I didn't get that on Absolution or Origin Symmetry, really.
I'm very curious to know where this is going to take the second half of their career, because it...
Because the tongue, you're not going to love...
The tongue is very in the cheek for the second half, but I almost think... Yeah. I almost worry, though, that you guys will think it goes too far, that you don't have enough, like, depth to glom onto, especially from Adam's side, that you don't have enough, like, meat on the bones. Yeah.
Well, this goes into my next point, is that this album... and last, have made me question why on earth I even like something, because now I have no idea how I enjoy music and why, because a lot of... because I don't... I articulated pretty well for Absolution, but I reckon this is going to be like completely contradicting myself in this, because certain things I probably like in this, I should have liked in Absolution, and I don't have a fucking clue why. So
this has got meat on the bones, but also that you've replaced the salt with glitter. Whereas on the later albums, you're sprinkling glitter. You're sprinkling
Adam, let him finish.
You're sprinkling the glitter. You're sprinkling the glitter, but there's less meat on the bones. You're sprinkling it onto like a less well cooked meal.
Why am I putting glitter on the meal at all? Is my question.
The glitter is the silliness.
Are you saying that Black Coal's Revelations is glitter steak?
Yeah.
Which makes me feel really sick, because I really hate glitter.
It's a glittery steak. You awful. Eat your steak with some lovely glitter all over it.
No.
That sounds inedible. That sounds awful. What I will say
my,
about
my score is glitter steak out of 10.
What I will say about this album is that it does line up with the thing that I said, another thing that I said at the beginning of the season, which is I find him to be a little bit vibe chasey. And I think in the same way that Absolution bounced off of nu metal and the resurgence of heavier music, I think this bounces off stuff that other people have done. And you mentioned new rave, so like Klaxons and Does It Offend You? Yeah.
But that's all a little bit later, I think, for the most part.
It's 2005 to 2008.
Like Klaxons,
new rave movement.
Klaxons was... Well,
comes
out
the same year, it's 2006.
What, their album?
Yeah.
Really?
But all of that stuff, and it's interesting that you mentioned...
DJ!
Does It Offend You? Yeah, is like 2008, because that was a uni thing for me. Because I remember seeing
but they,
the uni.
They did a remix of a song from this album.
Yeah, they did. They did, yeah.
But the thing is that the new rave movement that I think this... It's disingenuous of me to say that it bounced off of the new rave movement, because actually the new rave movement bounced off of the stuff that was paved by... the New York
the Strokes.
Punks. Not the Strokes. LCD Sound System. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The Rapture, Chuck, Simian Mobile Disco, even like Justice. You know,
talk to me
like,
more about Justice.
to a degree, like the blend of the rock and the synth kind of dance stuff. But I think it actually really works here. And it the album feels quite like... live and interesting, where Absolution just felt a bit like a dreary sort of slog for me.
And just to make it clear, Justice's self-titled album is a 10 out of 10 album, and I want that on the record.
It's an incredible album, Justice.
I consider that a perfect album.
Oh, it's incredible.
I rate that higher than I rate Absolution.
Wow.
Well, I gave Absolution a 9 and I gave that album a 10, so...
Great album. How many albums have Justice got? We should really put them on.
Don't care, that's all they need. They've not.
Okay, cool. I think it's like two or three.
Yeah,
like if that.
Disco, something, something.
Something, something.
Audio, disco, or something. And then I think that
something.
Yeah.
How are you feeling about this album on revisiting it, Lucas?
That's the most we've talked about an album prior to actually talking about the album yet, which just kind of shows that it's interesting and we like it.
There's some stuff going on.
And we say, how do I think about it on reflection? Well, so I said that I'd sort of reassessed Absolution, and but previously my coin toss was Absolution or Origin, which one's my favourite. I now think which one's my favourite, Black Holes and Origin.
Right.
Interesting. They are both sort of like different sides of a peak muse.
I mean, the three have always been the trilogy, and most muse fans would agree that they are the Holy
most
Trinity.
Most trilogies have three, you're
but,
right.
Yeah. But it used to always be like, I thought that the first two were the ones that I was kind of on the fence as to which one was my favourite. But actually now I'm fairly certain that Absolution's number three in those.
Okay.
And that it's between black holes and Origin is like, which one's my fave?
So this is 10.
Interesting. 10 10. So this could be your favourite Muse album. We don't know. So that gives you some sort of insight into the score that Lucas would be giving it.
Yeah.
It's either a 9 yeah. or a 10, yeah. isn't it?
No, it's not. Because he's not sure.
It's a 7.
Yeah.
Six out of 10. No, yeah. Best thing he's
yeah.
ever heard.
Yeah. 7 out of 10.
End bit.
Do you see what I said? Because 6 out of 10, and then it's like the best thing I've ever heard, which is... It's a subversion
yeah.
of what you think a 6 out of 10 album would be.
Yeah. And it's a callback to our very first episode as well.
Yeah.
Is it?
Is that not our very first episode? Or was
do,
it?
Do you Generation know what? Terror? I think it's our third episode.
We recorded them all in one day. That was it.
Yeah.
You came around my house and we recorded for 7 straight hours.
Yeah. Which it feels like this is getting to.
I mean, we're knocking on the door of that tonight.
I think we just.
This won't be a double. We've to go, got not, yeah, to, not enough to, put, to say.
To go behind the curtain to the fans, to the listeners, there we were unsure as to whether this was going to be a double episode or not. It is.
Yeah. We'll
do a couple of tracks and then we'll move on. No, I'm not doing triple. That's silly.
Silly.
Right. Shall we start the album?
Take a bow.
Take a Bow by Muse from the fourth album, Butterflies and... Nope, it's not called Butterflies and Hurricanes.
Mental.
Fuck's sake.
Okay. Do you want to do it again? I'm leaving it both in anyway.
And Revelation.
It starts with the most Muse sound of the world.
But it's already, like, for me, so much more, like, sonically interesting.
I mean, it's a song that, I mean, I can see Adam liking because it's not tradition structure, because this is just like a song that just builds. Yeah. There isn't verse, chorus, outro. You know, it's just buildy, massive.
There is a slight release when, like, the guitar solo bit kind of comes in. And then after that, it just keeps building and building and building and building until the end.
So I'm guessing in opposite to Apocalypse Please, that you felt started big and had nowhere to go.
Oh, there's so
this
much.
Starts with a little synth and
so
builds
much dynamic
and builds
here.
And builds and builds, yes. And ends on silly. Goes
yes.
really silly at the end.
But not even that silly. I have to say, this is one of the least silly songs on the album.
It's very dramatic.
Gets me right.
It's
very dramatic, but like... It feels
the lyrics are ridiculous. It's like you'll burn in hell for your sins.
I really hate the lyrics.
With guitars going.
You hate the lyrics, Steve.
Yeah. It really took me out. I'm not fussed on Take a Bow. Like, it serves the same purpose as Apocalypse Please. Like, I do think that it doesn't really get anywhere. I don't dislike it. Let me get this straight. I much prefer this to Apocalypse Please, but I do see them as very similar. It's definitely an intro song setting up the album. I love how that guitar bit that you just perfectly recaptured, by the way, Lucas. Yeah. It kind of gives a hint of where the album ends up, which is quite cool, and I like that. I don't dislike it. I just think this is absolutely fine, and it serves its purpose on the album. But I do almost...
I mean, the idea that it's got nowhere to go, I think I disagree with, because it does go
well,
somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, I think the interesting thing is that it goes to Starlight. It's all build up. Well, and the release and then massive isn't even release. On this
yeah, that's
song.
True. Yeah.
Well, and,
yeah.
And annoyingly on Spotify it cuts, but they do blend yeah. seamlessly from one
it's
into the next.
It's really irritating,
so
isn't
irritating.
It?
It's fucking annoying, isn't it? It's fucking annoying. I mean, we have. Is it worth just playing like the ouch, like the end, like we didn't really. The bit we played is not really necessarily what all the song is it?
Yeah, it's difficult. I'll play a little bit of the end just to show like how big it gets, I suppose. That is like the very end of the song, pretty much. And it's still like building.
Adam, you did a tweet about asking people what their favourite song was and why. And Emma on Twitter, who does all the pictures of Muse, Take Uno Bow.
Yeah.
She replied with about this song as her favourite. And she says it changes key like every other bar and it's in the same pattern as the circle of fifths. Does that mean anything to you? But
the effect of this song building...
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, but that made me think that I'm absolutely missing something in the song, and it did.
So that's how the song has that like constant feeling of getting bigger and bigger.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Apparently, it constantly feels
the
like
song,
it's tightening.
The key of the song keeps turning around the circle of fifths, moving to the nearest key. So I guess it's like doing like a circle.
Oh, okay.
Of changing key,
which is actually
which gives the impression of constantly growing.
Which
and
is a technique that is used a lot in classical music.
Oh, okay, cool.
And so, for me, like, we talked on the last album, I really don't want to mention it too much. We talked about, like, how I dislike Butterflies and Hurricanes because it's just sort of plopping a bit of a classical piece into a rock song. But this is, like, a genuine blend of sort of classic and rock and also a bit electronic. You can't actually tell where the synth ends and the violin begins, for me, which is really cool.
Is there even violin? There is, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's kind of one of
right
things
right
I'm
from
like,
the start
it's just
track.
Noise. It's just big. It's just like...
But I'm going to take issue with the lyrics thing, Steve, because for me, this is the best lyrics he's written so far.
Really?
So you've really
that surprises
got my
me,
because
I would have thought you'd be
now,
like, they're
Steve.
Two on the nose. I would have thought you'd say they're two on the nose and two...
You know I like on the nose lyrics. I'm a big fan of Manic Street Preachers.
Manic Street Preachers are quite... good, you know, they're a bit more...
Our freedom's consuming itself. What we've become is contrary to what we want. Take a bow.
Oh, no. Like, I just mean that you're going to burn in hell. I don't
like that bit. Like... sarcasm with an actual point. I have to say, until I looked them up, I thought that the lyric was what we've become is contrary to what we've won,
what
which
we
I'm going to be honest is a better lyric, Matt, if you were to re-record.
If you're asking Adam.
I mean, it has got a bit of the Adam, the thing that you're not massive on, which is the who are they?
No, like, but I completely know who they are.
It, all of them.
The perpetrators of the Iraq War, right?
Yeah, I mean,
our
I don't,
freedom
I mean,
is consuming itself. It's
I
this
think
sort of
that
post 9/11 sort of thing of you know a very watchful surveillance based state, and the
yeah,
country
I think
becoming
that's
that
the,
is contrary more... to what the country of USA was founded on, this idea of freedom. And then the sarcasm of like take a bow, as in like saying like well done. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that's
good
cool.
job, mate.
Well done,
shit.
Bush.
Good job, George. I mean, the less generous read, and probably what Matt said in an interview one time, because he gives a different read every fucking interview. There's
Don't
like,
really
so he's now he's replaced the trilateral. He's replaced the trilateral commission as his Illuminati of choice this time round.
Is it? Aliens?
He's now obsessed with the Bilderberg Group. Which
so
is the same
these are the bankers,
the secret shadow right. government
the,
behind
the Bilderberg Group.
Bilderberg
oh,
Group.
Right, okay.
It's his new. It's the new one that he's obsessed with
oh,
his,
right,
and his
okay.
album.
Yeah, yeah, that makes more sense. Yeah,
he's got real issues with the Bilderberg Workshop.
I knew as soon as I said the word Bilderberg, I knew that one of you would make a joke about Bilderberg. I just could tell. Yeah, it's interesting that I agree. Like, it almost. It's weird that we jump to it's America as opposed to. The UK, because we were also involved in that war, and you know,
yeah, but we are not a country built on freedom. Do you know what I mean? We are an empire that actually subjugated a lot of nations, and America is. Well, I mean, America is founded on freedom from us.
Yeah.
Like from Great Britain.
yeah, I know. I mean, I'm not disagreeing, because I also got that vibe. It's just interesting that we both immediately kind of know that it's that American bent, as opposed to it's about Blair. It's about to name names, and we should, because
we should
guys.
Name names.
They're not good blokes.
Point the
they're
finger.
Not good blokes. They've done wrongs.
I mean, is this the point where, you know, if we're talking about politics, do we want to talk about Bellamy and what he's been up to in 2006? Or I mean, do you want to save it for another time?
Oh, I mean, I'm curious to know where you're going to go with it. So by all means.
Well, he obviously went on the Alex Jones show in around 2006.
So
right?
this is an interesting thing, because Alex Jones was not to, at that point was like, quote unquote, a bit more harmless. Do you know what I mean?
No, I don't think he was. I just think that not enough people agreed with him that it was harmful.
Maybe.
And now we have more people.
Now, I didn't know he actually went on his show. I knew he was a fan.
Yeah.
And on so at Reading in 06, he has written on his back of his T-shirt, Terror Storm, which was a documentary that Alex Jones made about 9/11 being an inside job.
Fucking hell. Yeah, so Matt Bellamy went on the show. He went on the show and talked about how Alex Jones, who, for people who don't know, is basically a right-wing conspiracy theory-based commentator who has now been banned from YouTube, right?
Yeah,
he's been banned from a lot of things.
Yeah, he's been banned from a lot of things for, like, dangerous hate speech, basically.
Real piece of
and
shit.
Matt went on his show and was saying, like, wow, you've really opened my eyes to a lot of stuff, including the 9/11 being... quote-unquote inside job. Yeah,
he's full-blown. He's flag. Full jet fuel, doesn't melt steel beams at this point.
He has since walked back from that, but I think because I know of that, that's why I'm associating this with, like, American politics rather than UK politics.
Yeah, and also, bear in mind, they wrote... again, this was one of the songs they did in France, so actually not necessarily, but obviously a lot of this album was done in the States, but not this song, so kind of irrelevant. Although they had it in the bank. They played it in sort of in that pre-album cycle. They did like it in sort of demo-y sort of form. They did like sort of...
Well, they played it live?
Yeah, a little sort of version of it. I mean, I saw this live in 2000. I saw this live on the Absolution tour.
Really?
Just on the piano. All it was is the sort of the main melody as a piano interlude after Citizen Raised, I think. Like, but the just the melody. There was no fucking burn in hell for your sins and all that shit. It was just had a melody clearly
like
in his head.
It sounds like something that was built in the studio, you know, like layers and...
Well, and this is one of the ones that was built in... This is one of the two songs they managed to build in that first set of recording. Was actually...
Oh, right, okay, yeah.
Done.
No, I'm with
when
you.
When they spent months diving into being alone in a studio and trying to throw ideas at the wall, all they really came out with was Take a Bow and another.
Invincible, right?
So it kind of was built in the studio, but there was an idea. There was something. There wasn't completely conceived of there, because it was at least the melody on a piano was being played at gigs.
Do you like
that Glastonbury
song?
Gig. At that, I fucking love Take a Bow. Take a Bow's incredible.
Okay, well, okay, sorry.
Yeah,
sorry, mate.
Yeah, Adam.
Take a Bow is an absolute
beast.
Dare
ask him.
You know what I love in my muse, and it's big and silly and bombastic and ridiculous, and this song is one of the most that they
ever
do. You
know what's interesting, right? I used to love Apocalypse Please, don't like it anymore. I used to skip Take a Bow and not really like it, and I fucking love it now. This is a highlight of the album for me.
I think they know, because to this day it still has a fairly like substantial part in most gigs. It'll close the first portion, or like close the first encore. They normally give it a fairly good spot in a gig. It's considered like still a big crescendo sort of moment in most gigs.
Amazing. Well, that'd be good when we go see them.
You know what's going to happen? They won't play it.
Yeah.
Yeah, the one time we go. It'll be on every other night, except the night we go.
I mean, it is some of his... I mean, the lyrics, it is some of his most, like, overtly... like, he's literally saying, like, burn in hell for your sins. It's very on the
I
nose of being,
that.
Like, real.
Like,
there's no subtlety
so
about
specific.
It. I mean, he goes further later. I mean, there's a song later where he's literally telling people to kill themselves. We've not got that just yet. There is. It's a lyric on a later album which says, "Kill yourselves and do us all a favour."
Excellent.
Good lyric.
Wow. Cool.
Wow.
He's about to release a new version of this song.
Yeah, I saw
so
that.
So Matt Bellamy.
Matt Bellamy's right?
Yeah, Matt Bellamy's releasing a little EP for Record Store Day. It's like a picture disc. What the fuck is a picture disc? Is it a vinyl that's got something printed on it?
Yeah.
Well, I'll show you later. Right?
Okay, cool. And it's like it's largely like it's some of his like little solo stuff he's done over the last. It's a lot of like just stuff he's done. He's redoing Guiding Light, I think.
Yeah,
on
yeah.
Jeff Buckley's guitar. It's just called On Jeff's Guitar, and he's just re-recorded it, but he wanted to use Jeff Buckley's guitar. And then the version of Take a Bow is called,
because if you've got it, you can do it.
It's called Take a Bow Four Hands Mix, and I think the idea is it's supposed to be four hands on a piano playing it.
Okay.
So as if two people were playing it at the same time on a single piano. I don't know what it'll be.
Okay. Well, we'll find out, I imagine.
I mean, I need to make sure I get a copy of that picture disc.
Do you know how many there are?
No, I didn't look.
1,500.
Now, it's hard to know if
so
that...
So good luck with that.
But it's hard to know how many... It depends how much it costs is the other thing.
I imagine it'll be about 20 quid.
If it's 20 quid, I think it'll be difficult to get. If it's 100 quid, you might be a bit more like...
I don't know how they're doing Record Store Day this year, but usually you can only get it by going to the record store on that day.
Well, I have to make sure. If not, I'll have to go on eBay and spend a lot of money because I want it.
Yeah, that's what I did with some other Record Store Day things.
It sounds like you're being really like, don't want to talk about it.
I spent a lot of money on some things.
Gary Glitter's greatest hits.
So on this tour, on this obviously the whole Black Holes tour, this either like opened or closed every gig.
Cool.
Yeah.
It was this and Nights. Okay, cool. One way around or the other, they would either open with Take a Bow and close with Nights or vice versa.
I mean, open with this rather than close with it. But
don't necessarily.
I don't necessarily.
I think it works for both.
It does. I mean, this. You know how I've always said throughout all of the last season as well. I like an album to have a good opener and a good closer, and this is the best combo of all their albums. In terms of they're both two of the best songs on the albums, and it's the opener and the closer, and they're both just like, yeah, boy. this was originally going to be the closer of the album, so there was talks of actually them being the other way around.
Oh, okay.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I like that.
That would not have worked.
No,
I like.
No,
I
disagree.
The way around that it is.
Yes.
Even though it is called Take a Bow, which would imply it should go at the end.
Bow at the start.
Yeah, but the thing is, like like we were talking earlier, like at the end, there's a suite of Space Cowboy.
Yeah, the suite of
and
Space
at the
Cowboy.
At the beginning, there is a suite of electronic rock music, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think it's good that way around.
Especially,
or
the
you can
next
listen
one.
To the album on loop, like I've been doing.
I've been listening to it on loop a lot.
Yeah,
I was
it works.
Really excited to listen to this album.
Knights of Cydonia into Take a Bow completely works. You could just listen to this album forever if you wanted to.
So Steve, not so hot.
Not so hot. I don't dislike it.
Really
just,
hot.
Yeah.
Me and Adam are really hot.
You are
Lucas,
hot guys.
We're so hot.
Hotter
hot
than
as a burning star. Light.
Yep.
Good.
Yeah.
Steve.
Yeah?
I'm jumping over to you. What do you
know? Oh, I've written this down about Starlight. Dirty bass.
Is it dirty?
Oh, yeah. Isn't it's like... Dirty?
It's well fuzz.
Yeah, which is...
It's
and then,
well fuzz, but I mean...
And then has a lovely crystal clear piano over the top of it, which is... Adam, ooh. So there's a nice juxtaposition going on there, considering it's just sort of... It's sort of a standard pop song, but obviously a lot of context for us personally. But...
Very U2, by the way, quickly, that piano bit.
Oh, yeah.
Empty Souls and New Year's Day.
Oh, yeah. Super clear,
and
crystal clear.
It's got a similar
clear, yeah.
sort of vibe, yeah.
It's definitely a song made for the radio and constructed to be a single. Like,
yeah, this album's like Time Is Running Out. Like, radio
so
friendly.
So much better than Time Is Running Out.
No, but like, radio friendly, big jumpy, yeah. shouty, pointy, like, sort of song at the live, you know.
But of all like the big pop Muse singles, this is like one of the best, one of the better ones, I think.
Yeah.
I'm going to get my one thing I really hate about this song out of the way now. Is this the quickest of fade outs at the very end? It goes, I just wanted to hold. And there's very, very, it's like someone's going right at the end. It's so irritating.
I wonder if is that a Spotify thing?
I don't think
could be.
So.
It could also be the compression they use.
Yeah, maybe. But
I'm surprised it hasn't come up yet, even though we've only done one song. I gather this album is one of the most egregious offenders of the loudness wars.
No.
It doesn't feel like it to me.
No, it doesn't feel like it.
I remember
at all.
This being like a whole point of contention around this album was the loudness wars thing.
I can't say I've noticed it. There's genuine. And on this song specifically as well, actual dynamic. Like there's a big fake out where they keep. Trying to like trick you into thinking, well, this is as big as the song is gonna get, and then on the second time they do the black holes and revelations bit, it gets bigger and it's surprising because it's like 2/3 of the way through the song. You wouldn't be able to do that, I think, if it was particularly marred by the loudness wars.
Oh, I've been misinformed, clearly.
Maybe not, but or maybe there's been a remaster. I don't think there has, but it didn't occur to me when I was listening, I have to say. But I think that's because there's a lot of interesting sort of textures, and the stereo panning is really cool. So like the guitar part is all in the left hand side during the verses. There's a lot of space in this mix.
Good.
You know?
Yeah, space, yeah.
Yeah, good. Yeah, star, good. Star, not yeah. deliberate, but yeah.
Well, you think those mixing decisions weren't deliberate?
They put some space in it because stars are in space, yeah.
So Adam also thumbs up to this song.
Yeah, 100%. Really like this song. I think it's so catchy. I'm always singing this. It's just a real catchy sort of...
It's got a clapping bit as well.
Bang fest.
It's got a clappy. It's got a clappy clap clap. It's a clap-alonger live.
Yeah.
But originally it was a slower... This was originally apparently like a slower, mellower piece.
Okay.
Oh, really? I'm glad they
spit it up. And this is one of the ones... This was one of the ones where when they got to New York and they started listening to pop music and dance music that they decided to add Manhattan, that they decided to start adding like that sort of dancey, upbeat, up-tempo, something you can dance to sort of vibe. And apparently it's influenced by The Strokes' 1251.
Oh, I don't know that off the top
okay.
of
my head. Okay. I know of
the song, but I can't remember.
I can sort of see that. Sorry? 1251 is a song,
album?
I think.
That's a song, isn't it? Yeah, but you said, is that off of Reptilia? Reptilia's not the name
of their
album. Is
that not a name of their one of their albums?
No,
it's
that name Room of a song. Reptilia, it's name of a song. Reptilia's on Room on Fire.
Steve knows.
How about you shut your fucking mouth, Steve? If I'd wanted your
different strokes for different folks
on music, I would invite you onto a music podcast, you twat. Oh, wait.
The thing is, he didn't invite you. You just showed up.
Yeah, it's true.
It's time to get into...
It's okay. Yeah, Steve mentioned it, and we're just... Let's all have a big stretch, because Steve mentioned it.
Let's all have a bit of a stretch, and it's all settling. So, obviously, we had the emotion corner on the last episode about Blackout.
Yeah.
It's time to do it all over again. So, the personal context comes back round for Starlight, which is the aforementioned on the previous episode, dear friend of all of ours, partner of mine who died sadly in 2014. This was her favorite song, without question. Favorite song in the world
ever, or Muse?
think coin toss. I think.
Oh, really?
From what I remember.
What was the other one?
Definitely Muse. Tunnels by Arcade Fire.
Ooh, cool. It's a good song.
Another song that I cannot listen to.
Yeah.
Although I can listen to the song. That's the very good thing about this song. I can still just listen to the song and be like, what if I can catch a great song?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you would have gone to gigs with her that they played it at, right? So you have nice memories as well as the bad.
So literally this song was the reason we became a couple. Like, genuinely.
Really?
We were like close friends, and I was doing the like, I fancy you thing, and she was like the we're really good friends, and I don't want to spoil our friendship type thing. Classic.
Yeah.
Classic teens. I mean, she didn't find me fit enough.
And then
she listened to Starlight, and she was like, it made her think of me. Because it's about romance and stuff, isn't it? To an extent. Not to an extent. Fully.
Yeah.
And then she was to
the extent of 100%.
And literally was like, I've changed my mind. I think why am I fighting my feelings? Let's roll the dice, baby.
Well, she's only human, Lucas. And look at you.
And so it's literally like the reason we got together. It like then became it's the most our song I've ever had of a song with sort of anyone.
Yeah.
Like obviously it was played at her funeral.
Yeah.
That's my big association with it.
Yeah. Like there was, you know, we were together for 8 years. We at least had the conversation about marriage. It was going to be our first dance. Like that was a lock. There was never a question there. It was, you know, it was the song. And again, this is kind of always a bit strange to talk about because I am like happily engaged, but that doesn't mean things didn't happen. The past, you know, we've all had experiences. And this song is, I mean, it's kind of insane that it would be this song that then becomes our song and then she ultimately ends up passing away, because the lyrics of this song are literally about like wanting to be with someone who you cannot be with.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. The lyrical part of this song. So literally like, I'll never let you go if you promise not to fade away. You know, in the months after she passed away, those lyrics would slaughter me every single time because how poignant and how prescient those were. Like that, it's insane. Our hopes and expectations, black holes and revelations. Yep. Like my whole life got thrown out the window. All my plans, all my hopes and expectations. Everything got thrown out the window. It's ridiculous how on the nose the lyrics are for the situation that ended up being what our relationship, where it ended.
Yeah.
And it's the most of any song in the world. I cannot listen to this song without thinking of her. Like more than any song, it makes me think of a person or a place or a thing or a, you know, whatever. More than any other song, it will never be detached from that. It is absolutely impossible to detach Starlight from all of that personal context that surrounds it. And there was a point when I literally couldn't listen to it without like blubbing.
Yeah.
And now I can. I can listen to it because it, you know, not to, I don't want to sound, say people get over it, but you know what I mean? You know, people, you can get through things.
And it's more, now more of a celebration song of what was great. Right? Is that, would you say that's true or?
Yeah. Well, it's just a memory song. It's literally just a memory song because it's got memories of the entire relationship from start to finish, because it's literally the reason we got together. Any times we would hear it would obviously be just like our song at gigs. It was always like the special moment, like they're playing Starlight for us. Oh yeah, they're playing Starlight, that's nice. And then like to the point where it then is played at her funeral right at the end.
That's my memory, and is touching her coffin while this played.
And then at the very end of and then like after that, it being a song that I like couldn't listen to because of all of that. So more than any song in the world, and Neighborhood Tunnels by Arcade Fire, which we'll get to when we do an Arcade Fire season in season 9, is like a song that I just cannot detach from the person that this song's about her, as far as I'm concerned. Like for me, like that, it just is.
Yeah.
It's like, the personal context is so strong for this song and I love it. And it's a lovely, lovely song.
It is a very pleasant, lovely song.
And I'm guessing, for you guys, you've also got that because of the funeral connection.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
like she literally arrived to her funeral to this song because it was her favorite song. It's yeah. No one knows what to say and how to sort of change the vibe up a little bit now. Adam's got an idea. Oh, he's got his finger in the air.
If you translate the claps into Morse code, it spells out tits.
And it does.
So yeah,
similar. Yeah.
And yeah, I sometimes think that that's what she would have wanted.
I mean, I don't think she would have.
Right? Like,
I don't think she would ever.
Dot
have
dot dash dot 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 is tits. Tits.
Yeah. A lovely, lovely song that is forever entangled with a lot of memories,
a lot of stuff,
and a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
and also as a side point to anyone listening, this song is like to me. This is it. Kind of also the fact that I can now listen to this song and just jam out to it, and I'll always think of Joe when I hear it, but I don't blub or weep or, you know, start welling up or get emotional. Kind of also is kind of goes to show that you can always get through it. There's always like words cannot describe the lows I got to when all of this happened. And I thought I'd never come back from it. And now I can listen to it and jam and just be like, mate, what a banger.
Yeah.
What a catchy tune. Tits.
A lovely thing to say, though. Yeah, that you can get through it.
Yeah, that is really nice. And it also, it's a bit of a sad note to end on, but I think we have reached the...
oh, Christ. I'm so sorry.
We have reached the end of this episode. So we're obviously not massively planning to do a part two, but...
Oops.
Yeah, fuck it. You know, who cares? What I will do is I might read out a quick listener email, if that's okay with you guys.
Always.
Cool. I just need to sign in to the email account.
Well, whilst he's doing that, I always have to mention what they do with this song live.
Oh yes,
it's still played like pretty much every gig. It's an every gig.
It's a banger, right?
It's a big every song banger. Bit of a bugbear. It's become one of the ones he plays with no guitar. He does his Bono thing.
Mm. Oh, okay.
It's so weird that we refer to that as the Bono thing.
Well, I mean, he started doing it after they supported U2.
Okay, yeah, that does make sense.
And I can't help but think he didn't see it and go, "I want it."
Oh, like a bit of that. I want to do that. So we have an email from... actually, we have two emails because he felt the need to follow up on himself. This is from Bastian Hobbs, who says, "Hello from Denmark, Adam, Steve and Lucas. I've been listening to season 2 and I've enjoyed it thus far." It's a good use of thus far. Mm-hmm. Found you through a post on the Muse subreddit, which I'm sure one of you is responsible for, which I think might have been... It's probably Lucas. You run our Reddit account, right?
Yeah, I do the Reddit.
Yeah. If it wasn't obvious from my comments on Twitter, I'm a massive Muse fan, almost incalculably so, considering I only discovered them in 2018. Thought I'd share a story. I was at a festival of sorts for cover bands from schools all over Denmark. Whilst I was watching someone play the generic cover songs, a friend approached me. He had been at the other stage where a band had been playing Uprising. We thought the melody rang a bell, so we scoured the net and found it. At the time, I was a huge Dizzy Miz Lizzy fan. Anybody know Dizzy Miz Lizzy?
No.
Absolute silence from Stephen Lucas. But over time, I discovered more and more of Muse's wonderful, bombastic chaos. I fell in love with their sound, attitude, and writing style, and I almost only listened to them when I put on music. About October last year, every single release of theirs on Spotify was on my Muse Songs I Enjoy playlist. I have been unfortunate.
Which I think both of you are now going to have after this.
Yeah, I can't say
what types of songs were on that.
Every single song of theirs, though. I have been unfortunate enough to not have the time, money, or chance to see them live yet, though, which really kills me. Hope to catch them next time they visit my tiny little country. Hope this isn't too long. I tried to condense it to the best of my ability. I mean, that was a relatively short email. You're absolutely fine. I love your podcast and can't wait to hear more from you guys. Thank you very much. But then he follows up oh, fuck, forgot to add. Muse and especially Bellamy have been a huge inspiration to me musically and encouraged me to go out there and start a band, which I did. I was unsure of my voice and skills on guitar, but hearing Matt's story motivated me to get it together. Now I'm waiting for quarantine to be over and get out and play. Cool. Thank you, Bastian Hobbs, for getting in touch. Use the same email address and send us some of your music, right? Like, I just want to hear it. I'm just curious as to what a band that is influenced by Muse sort of sounds like if they don't sound like
probably great
royal blood.
Probably sounds great.
And that brings us to the end of another episode. Thank you so much for listening. It is your turn to come and talk to us on social media. We have a Twitter account at whatismusicpod, Instagram at whatismusicpod, TikTok at whatismusic. And if you would like, you know, to tell us a longer story about Muse, your connection with them, a longer sort of thought on something we've said on the podcast, you can email us whatismusicpod@gmail.com, and we'll probably read it out on here and respond to it for you. There's a couple of ways which, you know, you are 100% supporting us just by listening to us. If you'd like to support us in some kind of financial way with money, there's a couple of ways.
Give me your money.
Which is our merchandise at whatismusicpod.redbubble.com. You'll find some kind of like shit and stupid designs and one cool one. And I think it doesn't matter. If you'd like to chuck us a few quid because the merch is, you know, not to your taste, apart from that one cool one, and it doesn't matter. You can go to ko-fi.com, ko-fi.com/whatismusic, and just chuck us like a couple of quid. All donations are really greatly received and goes towards our running cost. That about does it. We covered two songs in this 2-hour episode. Well done, us. I will leave you with just one piece of advice. Don't take your bow, or bow will take you.
Lovely.
Sean Moore.
Bye.
Chris.